It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
And of course, it is not Denise this week, but Chris Pank. Chris, how are you going?
Good afternoon. I am very well, thank you. Hope you meet your listeners are too.
Yeah, fingers crossed that they are feeling well, right? So, what's your plan for the weekend so far?
Oh, well, it's a busy one, actually, out and about. It's the season, as they say, so I've got a local Christmas parade tonight in Kenya, and then another one again in Helensville, which is the area I represent. So, yeah, a bit of that and a few other things around the place. That should be busy but good.
Sounds exciting. We always love a busy Christmas time for sure.
That's right. Time to break out the blue tinsel and the blue baubles and the blue Christmas tree. It's all a bit silly, really, but, you know, it's that time of year, so we'll get out there and have a bit of fun in the community. It should be good.
Sounds like you have a very blue Christmas ahead of you.
Doesn't have the same ring to it, does it?
Not quite.
Green and white Christmas, blue Christmas, but, you know, I'm trying to become, you're trying to make it a thing, so
be with me. Got to give it a go. So we'll jump into it. Infrastructure spending. Now, government has recently announced that they're planning to put more spending into infrastructure. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, spending on infrastructure is a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's no need for anyone to sort of say that that's not a good idea. I guess the question is really, you know, what kind of spending is it going to be? Who are the winners and losers? And actually, are we talking about something that's different from usual, or is it more just a matter of continuing to put money where it needs to go, but along the lines of business as usual? And yeah, good to hear an announcement the other day from the government that they're spending a bit of money on school buildings and so on. But the reality is that's always needed, and every year that happens, and, you know, it's normally part of the budget process, and then it's just something that happens whereby, you know, sort of take stock and put money where it's needed. So, you know, good on them. But let's not sort of get carried away as though something new or different really happening, you know, than before. And, yeah, just to give a local example, in my area, there's a group of parents particularly who are anxious for a new school to match a lot of population growth. And, you know, that doesn't figure in the plans of what we heard announced the other day. So, yep, good as far as it goes, but, you know, it would be good to have something a bit extra beyond the usual to be able to celebrate this Christmas.
What kind of spending would you think would be going too far?
Oh, well, I think any spending that you know, genuinely improves the stock of classrooms and schools, you know, that's a good thing. So as long as it's good quality spending and there are good decisions about putting in decent buildings and so on, that's fine. And I mean, there's a bit of debate in politics and, you know, the public square at the moment about how much money you borrow for spending. Pretty low interest rates at the moment globally, so that's something we've said we're interested in. The government's now picking that up and looking to do that. But, you know, where there is a criticism to be made, I think, or at least questions to be asked that you'd expect the opposition to ask, is, you know, are all the spending decisions good ones, and are we going to get bang for buck? Or is it a matter really of borrowing when actually we can probably get by on the, you know, the tax take and all that? And so that's sort of really where the points of difference are at the moment.
I guess this has also prompted a conversation. There was kind of a commentary that national government, when they were in a position of power previously, it left an infrastructure underspend, in addition to schools not really seeing an increase in infrastructure spending across National's 9 years. What are National's priorities when it comes to infrastructure spending?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, it's just you just need to feed the beast constantly, because classrooms age like every bit of infrastructure, so you just need to continually keep paying into it. I mean, my understanding is actually in looking at the numbers since I became an MP in the last couple of years, and I wasn't around at the time of the previous government, but I understand that we actually increased the spending on infrastructure a huge amount. But, you know, that was needed then, population growth and so on, and need to upgrade continually, and it's needed now. So I don't think there's any side of politics that won't do that. But probably worth acknowledging as well, you can always spend more money, and even just sort of within the education space, before we even start looking at things like, you know, what are the needs of the health sector and any other sort of aspect of New Zealand life. Well, within the education space, just staying there, you know, there's a lot of people who are working really hard in our schools, a lot of really good claims to be paid better or to have better conditions and so forth. So that's a constant challenge for any government to monitor, and I think the current government has probably been a little bit guilty of sort of promising more than they've been prepared to deliver. But, you know, again, those conversations are ongoing. You will need to be more money continually put in, and that's the right thing to do. So, you know, we'll certainly be doing that as well, you know, if we get the chance to be back making those calls in a year's time.
Mm. I'll shift on to our next subject, which is the cannabis referendum draft bill. So what are your thoughts on this draft bill so far?
I'll be honest and say I've got my head across some of the detail, but not all of it. I haven't read all of the draft bill. I'd only got dropped a couple of days ago. Actually, funnily enough, I was speaking in Parliament about something a little bit different. It was electoral law, so different from cannabis, except that because it's going to be a referendum, the two subjects are linked. And I was saying actually in Parliament, at pretty much at the very moment that the government released, and you know, I've heard the announcement sort of came through on Twitter, that they had released the draft bill, and now I was standing up saying that we hadn't even seen the draft bill yet. So that was a cruel practical joke they played on me, but it is you know, it's something we haven't had a lot of time to get our heads around. You know, between now and the election, sometime in the second half of next year, we will get that chance. But for now, at least, there's a lot of unresolved questions, and we started asking those in the House and sort of haven't got a lot of detail, which is a bit worrying, around stuff like, you know, how we can sort of avoid a black market developing, because, you know, that's half of the argument that goes, that, you know, in favour of legalising or decriminalising, that you want to take the power away from the gangs who can sort of peddle the stuff at the moment, you know, sort of a dark monopoly, so to speak. You know, and tax rates, is it going to be treated the same as tobacco, as you know, or is it a harsher regime, or potentially looser, because at the moment it looks like a looser one. So how does that all fit into the smoke-free strategy? You know, implications for drug driving, drunk driving, but, you know, but similarly dangerous to human life. So all this stuff is swirling around and needs to be resolved, and I don't think it is yet. So that's going to be the challenge for the next 12 months, and then for people to make a decision based on that detail once it becomes available.
I guess I am curious, in terms of taxation of cannabis, what are National's major concerns in that regard?
Oh, well, the point really, is, as far as I can understand, is actually mostly just, is it going to be the same as tobacco, where there's a huge excise tax, which does a couple of things. One is it's meant to discourage people from doing it. You know, we want people to quit, so we want to make it more expensive, and so they go, oh, well, I'd rather spend the money doing something else. You know, but the counter argument is that people are addicted to something. They're going to just keep doing it anyway. They'll just have to pay more, and it might take food off the table. So, you know, that's a live debate as far as tobacco goes. And also the other argument is, well, if there are health implications that everyone's going to have to pay for, because we need extra wards and hospitals to deal with people who have related conditions, be that lung cancer in the case of tobacco, or, you know, mental health issues associated and well documented in the case of, you know, cannabis use, shouldn't we be funding that somehow out of the operation and sale of the product in itself? So, you know, you can make good arguments either way in terms of all this stuff, but you know, for it not to be part of the conversation because it looks just a lot like the government didn't think about it, that's a bit poor, really, at this late stage of the game.
On the subject of drug driving, Chloe Swarbrick was speaking on this, and she said it is already happening. We just don't really have any figures around that necessarily. Do you not deny that drug driving is currently a problem?
Oh, yeah. If I've understood your question correctly, then I'd answer it and say it's a massive problem. In fact, we've just had this year just gone, I think for the first time ever, but don't quote me on exact detail, but a relatively recent phenomenon that we have more people now dying of accidents caused by drug driving as opposed to drunk driving. It's pretty the two words sound so similar, it's hard to differentiate. But either way, I mean, you know, if a family member is killed by someone who's impaired while they're driving, then, you know, it's, who cares, really? They're both things that we should be anxious to avoid. And I've heard Chloe before on the subject, and my understanding is she's essentially admitted that we don't really have the technology to monitor the drug driving use. It's a different sort of a different proposition to and to be fair, drug driving, you know, it's not just cannabis, it's other stuff too.
Yep.
You know, so I'm not trying to conflate unnecessarily, but you know, we don't have a lot of tests for what that looks like, other than good old, you know, stand in a line and see if you can walk straight, and if you're fine, you know, you do get a step on the back and the jolly copper tells you to go on your way and you'll be right. know, the reality is we don't have a lot of detail around that. We don't have good systems in place, and you know, so we're taking a huge punt in terms of people's behaviour, as opposed to the right of everyone to be able to get on the roads safely and not be sort of mown down by someone who's high on goodness knows what.
Mm. Do you think, in terms of regulation, it would give government potentially more tools in terms of information around use of drugs, and as well as funding to be able to address that, address drug driving that is currently happening?
Well, I understand the argument, but the reality is there's nothing wrong or nothing to stop the government now from putting in as much money as it likes to educating people about the dangers of doing it. So, like, to be honest, I don't really buy the argument that says, oh, well, we need to allow people to do this so that we can talk to them about why it's a bad thing. I mean,
I don't think that's quite what I was arguing.
Okay.
I think
okay,
in
sure.
terms of what I was meaning is we don't have information on how many people are necessarily consuming these drugs. Granted, that could potentially be flawed, but we would have a
okay.
better idea, as well as being able to get some more funding from taxation of cannabis to be able to fund better controls.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, I hadn't sort of quite understood where you're going with that. I get the argument, but the reality is, you know, if we've got a regime that at the moment looks like they're putting forward that you can sort of grow your own, we're not going to know how much use there is out there if, you know, if I've got a couple of plants in my household and you've got a couple of yours as well. That's, I mean, if you want to totally regulate it and have it over the counter in the pharmacies and so on, a la medicinal cannabis, or, you know, what the version of medicinal cannabis that we've been arguing for, then sure, we'll know a lot more about usage. But the reality is, you know, the trade-off is once you regulate something more tightly, you give more opportunities or more motive for people to want to get around it. And, you know, lo and behold, the black market that already exists just exists in a slightly different space that shifted sideways, and but is sort of no less powerful in terms of people who want to circumvent the rules and give people maybe something that they don't have currently or can't take legally at the moment. But, you know, in terms of it, there'll be stuff around increased potency or greater supply than what you can grow yourself that will be attractive to some people to peddle the misery. So, you know, that's it's sort of all very well to say, oh, well, you know, we'll go to this environment where we know a bit more and no one will do anything they shouldn't. Well, you know, with all due respect to those in Parliament, for example, who are putting out that kind of argument, it's a little bit, it's sort of wishful thinking at best.
Mm. I guess the last kind of note I would like to end on is National's position that they would prefer not to have a bill at all, or is the draft bill just not good enough?
Oh, good question. It sort of depends about how you approach it. I mean, if you say that there should be a referendum on the subject, then I think we would say that it's not good enough to have a draft bill that then, you know, people will vote on the basis of what's in front of them. And then the new parliament will go, oh, well, yes, 51% of people, you know, agreed, you know, let's say for argument's sake, that's the case. Then that bill to be passed into law would have to go through the whole process where it might change quite a lot. So then you say, well, were people voting for what they're ultimately going to get anyway? You know, it might be looser, it might be tighter. So that's sort of one category. But you know, the other possibility that you've raised is actually a good one, which is to say that the draft bill itself we don't particularly like. Oh, well, you know, some of us don't. You know, and I should be clear. You know, a National Party MPs and of course members and supporters out there. You know, there'll be a variety of views, but I think overall the position out and about seems to be quite a lot more sceptical than proponents of the liberalisation seem to have realised until now.
Mm. I'll shift on to our last subject here, foreign political donations bill. Now, the commentary from Simon Bridges was recently that this legislation is minor. Is National stance that the legislation should go further?
Yes. Yes, that's right. I mean, our objections were, I guess I should start by saying, yes, it's reasonably minor, but it's a step in the right direction. So, mm-hmm. you know, credit to the government for sort of moving in the right direction, and it's the direction we were keen to sort of move in as well. Overseas experience has shown that there's at least a possibility that foreign interference through donations and other methods, you know, is a problem for Western democracies. I mean, it doesn't go far enough in the sense that it's there are loopholes in it. Basically, you can still have a company that's owned fully by foreign interests, could be 100% shareholding overseas, and as long as it's incorporated in New Zealand, so at least one New Zealand resident director, for example, then it's fair game and it's considered a New Zealand donation, which just seems extraordinary, really, if you think about, you know, sort of getting to examples and counter-examples all day long, so I won't trouble you and your listeners with that, but, you know, one case of recent occurrence in the media at the moment, the New Zealand First Foundation, well, it doesn't solve that problem in terms of not knowing where money's coming from going into the foundation. You know, whereas New Zealand, you know, well, the National Party, for example, has a foundation, but we declare the donations that come in. So you could say foreign money's a problem, and, you know, I think that's where everyone's at now, to sort of acknowledge that. But it's a lack of transparency as well, and that's a problem that the bill doesn't fix. So that's what my boss has been saying, really, when he's, you know, basically pointing out it doesn't go far enough, and if we're going to do this thing and change the law, we should actually do it in a way that makes sense for all situations.
Do you personally know how much funding and donations the National Party has received from foreign entities?
If I were in front of a computer and if I asked you to hold the line and you had a very boring 2.5 minutes of radio while I googled it all, I would be able to tell you to the cent, because that's how it works. It's, you know, it's full disclosure, which is, as I say, sort of half the battle, really, that you need the transparency. That is all out there in terms of, you know, my party and most parties, to be fair. New Zealand First, not so much, but like I say, that's sort of all been, you know, we'll get the detail on that in due course. That'll all come out, but, you know, we've got to have a law that actually sort of makes sense across all the circumstances. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, people just sort of shuffle around money, and sadly, that's just human nature and Winston Peters' nature too.
While Simon Bridges was being questioned on this subject of the $150,000 donation to the National Party by a foreign company, he was questioned about that and he became quite defensive. Is that something that concerns you in terms of public perception around Nationals' foreign donations?
Oh, well, I mean, I think you know, you're naturally defensive if we're going to frame it like that. When if there's any suggestion that something's been done wrong, that it's actually been perfectly straightforward in accordance with the law. So, I mean, he's right to push back against any sort of suggestions to the contrary. I mean, public perception, as long as it's guided by facts, needs to be respected in a democracy. And the public perception that I sort of pick up on talking to people, and in the political arena as well, is that we need to be really clear and transparent in our electoral law, including with donations, especially with donations. And that's what I think everyone's pretty keen to do. But yeah, like I say, the way to do it isn't by to sort of have a half-pie bill that comes through Parliament this week, unannounced and without consultation, and rushed through without a select committee process. That's the kind of thing that parties in opposition have always sort of jumped up and down about. And, you know, none more so than the Greens, who were very big on this kind of process stuff until they became in government, and suddenly they're very happy with it. So, you know, I've had a bit of fun pointing out this week, and, you know, it's not just an academic or sort of ballet issue, that you've got to have good processes. It's actually a matter of allowing everyone to have their say, so that you end up with a good workable law at the end of it, given that we're all going to have to play by the rules of the game come next year's election.
I guess I'm just kind of curious, on a personal level, are you against foreign donations?
I'm against undue foreign influence, and I think that foreign donations, you know, there's no real need for them in our democracy. I think I think it's fair enough that people pay their own hard-earned money. If they're silly enough to want to give it to a political party, then more power to them. But I don't think particularly we need foreigners doing that, because they're not directly affected by the decisions that our politicians make. So I think it's a good move that's been made, and, you know, along with my National Party colleagues, we voted along with the government this week to ban foreign donations, except if it's less than $50, then that's sort of okay. But it's actually probably worth noting that, you know, it was already the case that foreigners couldn't donate unless it was up to $1,500. Now, that's a different amount of money, sure. So it has been a bit of a tightening, and that's you know, a good thing in itself. But the reality is, you know, it's not like there's open slather at the moment. Foreign donations are actually, on average, something like $66 per donation, which isn't very much, I hate to say it, in the context of paying for campaign stuff. You know, $66 gets you a letter posted to 66 households, you know, at a dollar a pop, whatever it is now. And, you know, we've got 65,000 people that we represent in each electorate. So the numbers are very small. The money's minute. And you can keep $50 anyway. So we're now down to arguing over $16 per foreign donation, which is about the block of a decent, you know, the price of a decent block of cheese. So anyway, it's to be honest, it's been it's all been pretty minor and minimal. But, you know, principle's important. So, you know, let's do that and do a bit more as well when we get to it.
Mm. I'll ask my last question now, and it's always going to be a personal one with me. So I am going to ask you, have you ever smoked weed before?
No, I haven't.
No?
No.
Not even tempted? Not even peer pressure?
No. No, I mean, I sort of get my distance from people. You know, I grew up in West Auckland, and no doubt there's plenty going around in certain circles, but I kept my distance from that. I sort of wasn't particularly interested in that scene. You know, I joined the Navy, and, you know, I like to think that there isn't too much of that going around for people who are at sea operating, you know, in machinery and driving ships around the ocean. And certainly that wasn't, again, something that I was interested in doing as part of my life at the time. And pleased to say I've managed to remain steering clear since as well.
Very interesting. Impressive.
Okay, well, I don't know about that. Not on a high horse, I'm just saying. You asked me, that's the rationale. So it's certainly what I'd encourage any other, you know, young person growing up to do. Here we go, there's my old man.
2 cents, love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for joining me, Chris.
Good one, lovely to talk to you as always.
Yes, you have a good weekend.
Thank you too.
Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.